Hello and welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to Good Areas Live. I'm Behram Kazi, who you can find at Def Mango on Twitter. And with me is my colleague Shayan Ahmed Khan, who you can find at Tweets by Shayan on Twitter. And before we get into the mix of things, I'd just like to tell all of you that these podcasts on our Good Areas network, they are powered by our supporters on Patreon. You can become one of them by going to patreon.com/Good Areas Podcast, and then you can enjoy ad-free content, talk to us exclusively, and give us podcast recommendations as well. It's a very inclusive community, so make yourself at home. All right then, Shayan, we're here to preview the Asia Cup. It starts day after tomorrow. And I don't know about you, but the one thing that's really exciting me personally for this Asia Cup, or with respect to this Asia Cup, is that, you know, sure, India are hot favorites. You expect them to make the final. And I mean, it is kind of India's tournament to lose. But a lot of these other teams in Pakistan, Bangladesh, Sri Lanka, and even Afghanistan, right? They're pretty much operating at a similar level, and there is no correct answer as to which team is the best out of these and who would be favorites to make the final, right?
Yeah, definitely. I think it's always with Asia Cups, we are like, okay, it's going to be an India-Pakistan final, but some team or the other always ends up spoiling it. That's what I've noticed for the last few Asia Cups, right?
Yeah, that team usually always is Sri Lanka. They actually have a really, really good Asia Cup record. And it's funny how they tweaked the format of the Asia Cup to ensure that Pakistan and India play a minimum of 2 games and then a maximum of 3 games. But that has never happened. They've never played the final since they've introduced this format. And, you know, or ever actually, I think they might never have played a final. But yeah, maybe I'm wrong about that. If someone wants to correct us, you can in the comments. So that's the interesting bit, I feel. And I mean, look, this time I feel like either of those teams, Bangladesh, Sri Lanka, Afghanistan, Pakistan, they have an equal shot at making the final. But it's going to be really tough work defeating India, isn't it?
Yeah, I think definitely. A lot of it is going to depend on the group stages, isn't it? Because who you're going to play, I think, for a team like Oman, for instance, they're going to have to play both India and Pakistan, which I don't think is going to be very ideal for them, right?
And Oman have had troubles of their own in the recent past with respect to player payments and whatnot. So there's a lot going on over there as well. But what I find fascinating in this format is because they want to club India and Pakistan together, right? Because, you know, you have India, Pakistan, Oman and the UAE in one of those groups.
Exactly.
They do that every single time so that they can get another India-Pakistan game in the next phase, the Super Fours. But what it also does is that it always pits Bangladesh, Sri Lanka and Afghanistan up against each other in a group of death. Which, if you think about it, is kind of unfair, isn't it?
Yeah, that is always the group of death, right? Like the last time the ODI Asia Cup happened, I think it was again the same 3 teams, they were there in one. And Afghanistan actually ended up missing out on a very stupid technicality of sorts. Like they didn't play smart, so to say, in that Asia Cup. I don't even like clearly remember what happened that time, but I remember it was a very funny, hilarious sort of a way of Afghanistan not making it. But of course, Sri Lanka had a very good Asia Cup that time, and Pakistan, like they had a very strong team and everything, on paper at least, but it's probably ended up being the downfall of Pakistan cricket in recent times, I would have to say, that tournament, right?
It's that reserve day from hell, bro. that's where it all goes. From that point on, it's just all bad news for Pakistan and things start to fall apart. And it is kind of a watershed moment if we look back at it. But yes, I mean, look, Sri Lanka, they are pedigreed performers in the Asia Cup. Afghanistan are probably, you know, one of the dark horses of this tournament, honestly. I feel like on their day, they have it in them to even defeat India if their spin bowlers, you know, they come to the party. And very interesting thing that you brought up, the last Asia Cup, of course, where I think it was an analyst issue. The analyst messed up and Afghanistan thought they'd done what they needed to do, and that wasn't the case. And then they missed out on a Super Fours, spot. But also that was ODIs, this is T20s. I feel like the Asia Cup is best suited to the T20 format because it kind of brings all of these other teams like Oman, Hong Kong and the UAE into play. Because this is a format on which, in which, you know, individual brilliance on the day can help you win games. You don't need to be the best team, right? Just a really, really good performance can propel you.
Yeah, I think I can see that. But I think as a nostalgia merchant, I would have to say that I associate the Asia Cup more with ODIs. Like I grew up watching 2010, 2012, 2014. So Asia Cup, I just instantly think it's ODI.
Yeah.
I think there is that
element. I like it this way.
Yeah, I mean, I don't mind the T20 one. Yeah, that's also cool.
I just feel like, you know, over here, who knows? Who knows? Hong Kong might beat one of those teams, right? Yeah. Or Pakistan loses to the UAE. All of these things could potentially, or in theory, happen, which makes it all the more exciting. And I feel like, you know, Jared and I used to speak about this, how the idea of the Asia Cup probably originated, you know, from the Euros in football and all the other continental cups. Mm-hmm. And it should be bigger than it is. But right now, it's just another excuse to get India and Pakistan to play each other and make that money so that that feeds the cricket of lesser endowed cricket boards. Like, Hong Kong needs this game, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And so does the UAE and Oman. And it's kind of just become that ever since both those countries have stopped playing each other bilaterally.
Yeah, I think that's a very fair point. Wasn't it Robin Othappa who brought it up on the Kimappa podcast? That I think I was listening to a short where he was talking about, you know, how this game is really important for Hong Kong cricket, I think, in particular. He was giving their example. But it isn't just about India and Pakistan here. It's the fact that this money is going to be, you know, very relevant for the rest of the cricketing nations. And I think I can definitely see the logic in that for sure. So, and we can't just deny the fact that India and Pakistan will get the most eyeballs. It always happens.
Yeah. That is the thing, right? You can make an argument that the rivalry isn't the same because there is a big gulf now between India and Pakistan in terms of quality. India, of course, I don't think they're, not only are they the best team in this competition, they are maybe the best T20 side in the world. They are the current champions. And the way they've approached T20 cricket, you know, high intent methods and stuff like that. And their bowling attack, when I look at that bowling attack, 12 overs are Kuldeep, Varun and Bumrah.
Yeah.
So go figure. I mean, Akshar and Hardik are probably the weak links and they're even pretty damn good. So India are, like, forget about their batters. They have the best bowling attack as well. And they are the most rounded team. And I kind of discussed the squad with Varun, but I wanted to get your thoughts on this. Shubman Gill has done well in T20s. Don't get me wrong. Yeah. He has a good record, especially in the IPL. Last three seasons, he's done exceptionally well.
Exactly.
But then the guys he's in ahead of in this particular squad are Yashasvi Jaiswal, who I particularly or personally rate higher than Gill, right? Especially as an opening T20 bat. And then if you want to open with Sanju Samson and Abhishek Sharma, then you could have had Shreyas Iyer ahead of Shubman Gill, who did really, really well in the UAE, albeit that was ODIs, but in the Champions Trophy. Yeah. And then he was just ridiculously good this IPL. Like, he surprised everyone. And you'd have to say both of those guys are pretty hard done by.
See, I think this is always what happens, right? Like, in a competitive squad like India, I think we always talk about the players who have missed out. So I just think that, yes, you have a very fair point when you say Jaiswal might be the better T20 opener. I don't think I fully disagree with that. Especially in the power play, I think Jaiswal has better numbers and he can maximize that phase better. But I think what you get with Gill is he's brilliant in the middle overs. So he doesn't start very fast in the power play, but he picks up pace really well in the middle overs. And he is very consistent. And if you look at his strike rates batting first, I think he's really good at that in particular. He has that ability to, you know, score a lot of runs and score them quickly. So that, and as we've seen in the past three IPL seasons, right? And a lot of people were saying that he's a bit more reliant on Ahmedabad. But I think this season he has proved that he can score even outside of Ahmedabad. So it's not really even a ground thing or a conditions thing. So, of course, for Gujarat Titans, he does open the innings. So in my ideal 11, I think I would have Gill batting at number 3. I don't think I would open with Shubman Gill. As far as Shreyas Iyer is concerned, I think, yes, this season he was absolutely magnificent. And the season before this, what happened was that, you know, he was pretty handy, of course. He led KKR to the title, but he didn't have as big of a role because KKR's openers were so good. And he was, you know, more of a good role player, I would have to say that. So I don't know if Shreyas Iyer has been hard done by in that sense, because Gill has been a better performer over a longer period of time, I would say.
Fair enough. And of course, like, we're talking about how, at least for me, either of those guys could have gotten ahead of Gill in the squad.
No, I can see that.
If I was a selector, if I was Ajit Akarkar, I would have done that. But that's not to say that Gill is a bad player. Like, it's a really good problem to have, right?
I know,
he's still Shubman Gill. Yeah. And, you know, if the surfaces get tricky, perhaps his role becomes even more prominent. Yeah. And I expect him to accumulate a good amount of runs. And, you know, there are two things that come to mind over here. First, of course, rumor mill has it that he is opening the batting, and Gautam Gambhir is even looking at Jitesh Sharma to start ahead of Sanju Samson, which makes sense to me, because I would much rather play Jitesh as opposed to fiddle with Sanju's batting position.
I think that
makes sense. But also, there's the Gautam Gambhir fixation on left-hand you know, batting combination, which we've seen in the past, and how, you know, when I was talking to Varun about this, we came to the conclusion that they probably want to open with Gill and Abhishek. And then if Abhishek gets out, you send in Tilak.
Yeah.
And if Gill gets out, you send in Sky. So that does kind of make sense to me, because you've got Akshar and Hardik after that, who you could use similarly.
Yeah, I think that's actually a very good, you know, situation for India to be in. They don't have to be like, they don't have to follow a fixed batting order, really. Like, they can just send the batters depending upon their situation, depending upon the match situation and which the other batter who is batting at that time. So I actually like left-right combinations in white ball cricket a lot more, I think, compared to test. Because ultimately in test cricket, I think the quality, because it's a five-day game and ultimately it comes down to how good you are over a long period of time. But in T20s, definitely it helps, especially if, let's say, there's a shorter boundary or, you know, you can take on a specific matchup. So I think definitely, I have no issues with that. Yeah.
Yeah. And I mean, India have options aplenty, right? They could, in theory, bench Gill, play Samson, and play, you know, Rinku instead of Jitesh. That's always an option. Another thing that Gautam Gambhir really likes to do is play deeper batting lineups.
Yeah.
Now, I think for T20s, it does kind of make sense. Even if you ask me, I'd be, you know, very, very tempted to not play a third seamer at all. Have Hardik Pandya as the second seamer, and then have three spinners in my lineup in Kuldeep Yadav, Varun Chakravarti, and then you've got Akshar Patel. Would you say that makes sense to you as well?
Yeah, I can see that. But like, how would your 11 form in that case? Like,
I suppose
which extra batter would you play?
You would either play Dubé or Rinku. Now, that depends. I think Rinku is probably better suited to a number 7 spot, because I don't want to waste Akshar and Hardik, right? You don't want to be closer to the end of the 20 overs and you're like, oh, Hardik hasn't had a bat yet.
Exactly.
I don't want that situation.
Yeah.
Yeah. So,
no, I think Dubé, I like that.
I love him as a spin basher.
Yeah.
He hasn't been in form, but then Rinku, barring some recent, you know, good performances in domestic cricket, he was also out of form. So, you know, there is a question that begs to be asked over there, that perhaps maybe you could have even had higher ahead of those two guys. But I like how India don't just discard players instantly as well. So even if Dubé is out of form, they're going to stick with him, like they did with Hardik Pandya after the previous IPL, right?
Yeah.
And then he was one of the stars for India in that T20 World Cup, bowled one of the most important overs, got Heinrich Klassen. So, I mean, I like the fact that they're putting in a lot of faith in the, you know, the players who have been around the team and around the squad. Now, here's the interesting bit, though. One last thing that I really wanted to discuss with you is, talk to me about Harshit Rana. To me, it feels like he's being forced into an all-format role by Gautam Gambhir, whereas Prasad Krishna had better numbers in the IPL in that same middle-overs to death-overs role. Yeah. Like, he was a very good enforcer in the IPL. And I know Harshit is pretty good with the slower ones, but would you have had Prasad over him in the squad?
Yeah, I think I would have had Prasad as well, probably. But I think I can see the argument for Harshit as well, probably, because he gives you that batting depth. Not that this top order may necessarily need that cushion of long batting, maybe up to number 8 or number 9. But I think another thing with Harshit is he's been in the system now. He played in the Champions Trophy as well, so maybe that played a part. And he also had a very good IPL in 2024. 2025, I think, yes, Prasad was definitely better. He was one of the best bowlers of the tournament. And even I think I like his attributes more comparatively from what I've seen. But yes, I don't think it's a massive issue for me if they play Harshit either. Although I think I would like to start with Arshdeep, because, you know, you want that new ball strength up top. It will be interesting to see whether India go with the deep batting lineup or not. And because I think with the quality of bowlers that India has, I don't really think they necessarily need to bat deep. They can just pick their best bowlers. You know, they can go Arshdeep Bumrah and they can go Varun Kuldeep and they'll have Hardik and Akshar. That's a world-class bowling attack right there.
I don't entirely disagree with that. In fact, I'm also leaning more towards that. I just have a feeling Gautam Gambhir won't do that, right? Because he would want a deeper batting lineup. But I think if you share the fifth bowling duties with Hardik and Akshar, that works perfectly fine as well. And I would also prefer Arshdeep ahead of Harshit, because I'd rather have new ball prowess, new ball bowling prowess ahead of death overs, because you've already got Hardik Pandya and Jasprit Bumrah for that particular phase. So again, options are plenty for India. And look, whatever squad they would have picked over here, Shayan, they would have started this tournament as favorites. That is just the reality of it.
Yeah. I have one fun question for you, actually. Let's say India can't pick any of these 15 players. If they make a 15-man squad of the remaining team, of the remaining players, will they still be the favorites in this tournament?
I'm not sure.
I know, it will be a bit,
Deep and bit Varun
of a
out.
Off, I know. But
whoever the bowlers are after that could go for plenty, right? So that's why I don't think, like, they could still be, you know, a very good team who could contend quite well with the rest of the teams. But I don't think they would be out and out favorites.
Yeah,
but anyway, that's... Agreed. Yeah, that's enough on India. Of course, we both agree they are hot favorites. And, you know, if you play the maximum amount of games in this tournament, in the Asia Cup, if you play the final, essentially, you play 7 games. My question to you is, what are the odds India wins 7 out of 7? Because this is a volatile format. India haven't played as a unit for a while, right? Especially T20 cricket. They will be rusty, although these guys are so high on quality, that shouldn't matter. But, like, you know, it's easy to drop a game in T20s, which is why I'm asking you, how likely is it that they go 7 out of 7? Because that's also possible.
I still think it can happen. Like, a pretty high chance, I would have to say that. The thing is that, of course, as you mentioned, T20 is a volatile format. So, and maybe if the toss doesn't go their way or anything can happen, right? You maybe early wickets fall on a given day. Maybe another team has a good day. Any of these things are possible. But the fact that for a long period of time, since the last T20 World Cup till now, India just haven't lost a lot of T20 games, which is quite frankly ridiculous to me, honestly. Like, I don't understand how they've been able to do this with this level of consistency. And they're just, like, they're outperforming on all the metrics, man. Like, I don't really have much to say.
And they're playing very, very high intent cricket. So you guys also let us know in the comment section below whether or not you feel India can go 7 out of 7 and give us a percentage or just, play around with this. Let us know what your thoughts are. And that's enough on India. We have some other teams to discuss as well. But before that, we will be taking a short break. You guys are watching Good Areas Live and it's the Asia Cup preview with Behram and Cheyenne. So go nowhere. We will be back in like half a minute.
Ross Taylor couldn't see at night or when the clouds were in. Eventually, he had to see an eye specialist who would fix his eyesight. In the 2 years before the change, he still averaged more than 50 in international cricket. The top level of batting talent can basically see in the dark. That is who we are talking about in our new book, The Art of Batting. Head over and order your copy today.
Welcome back to Good Areas Live. You guys are with Behram and Cheyenne and we are previewing the Asia Cup. We've spoken about the hot favourites India and I don't think there was much else to talk about. Let's move on to the rest. I want to talk about Pakistan. Have you been following Pakistan cricket recently, Cheyenne?
I honestly haven't followed a lot of T20 international cricket, to be honest, because I've been so engrossed in test matches. And before that, obviously, we had the IPL and the Champions Trophy. So I honestly have been out of the loop with T20 internationals for other teams. India, I still keep a bit of track and I know what's going on roughly. Although I would still have to say I'm more into test cricket because that's what we cover the most at Good Areas, right? And we cover that intensely. So I think a lot of the energy and time goes into that, I would have to say.
And rightly so. But of course, this is a multi-nation tournament.
These things come up.
But I'll give you a quick briefing. So Mike Hessen is now head coach of Pakistan, celebrated white ball coach, modern day cricket. You know, he understands it really, really well. Yeah. And Hessen has managed to win 9 out of 13 T20Is in charge thus far. He's lost 2 T20Is in Bangladesh. And I don't think there's any shame losing to Bangladesh in Bangladesh because they're a really good side at home. And then they've lost a T20I to Afghanistan in the ongoing Tri series. And then they lost one to the West Indies, although they won the series over there in the Caribbean. Now, Hessen is trying to change stuff. Babar and Rizwan are out of the mix, right? And you see a lot of high-intent batters in that top order and throughout, right? Like, they're opening with Saib Zada Farhan and Saim Ayub. Then you've got Fakhar Zaman. There's this new kid, Hassan Nawaz, who can smash spin really well. And even when the ball is old, he does well versus pace. And then you've got Salman Ali Aga, who's the captain. Mohammad Haris is somewhat being compromised because he's a keeper batter who likes to bat in the top order, but he's now coming lower down the order. And then you've got two all-rounders in Fahim Ashraf and Mohammad Nawaz, and only three frontline bowlers in Shaheen, Haris Rauf, and one of Abrar Ahmed and Sufyan Mukim. So, thing over here is, Hessen is hell-bent on playing the extra batter. And so, Mohammad Nawaz becomes your fourth bowler and you're completely gambling with 6 to 8 overs, right? Potentially, with the ball. I feel like that could backfire. I do understand why Hessen is going for that approach, but ultimately, frontline bowlers are frontline bowlers, like you mentioned just a while back for India.
Yeah.
Which camp do you kind of favor more? Extra batter or better bowling?
I would probably still have to say you can't compromise too much on bowling, especially when you're saying only 12 overs are, you know, relatively secure. But it also has to depend on the form of the bowlers. If probably Hessen thinks that the bowlers are not really in a lot of form, I could see that if that is the case. And in that case, if he wants to shore up his batting and, you know, make sure that he scores a lot of runs and tries to outbat teams, I think that's a fair tactic in itself. But maybe against India, I don't know how much it will work really.
Yeah.
Because against India, how are you going to outbat them? that, like, on on paper and on the quality of the two teams, I don't think that's really going to happen. So maybe against India, you need to have better bowling to have a chance, because I think your best chance against India has to be early wickets. If you take early wickets, you'll probably put them under pressure and make sure that they're not able to get a lot ahead of the par score, which they probably still would be able to cross the par score simply because of the depth they have. But I think, in especially against a lineup like India, I would probably have to say bowling does matter more. But what do you say about Afghanistan? Like, playing against Afghanistan, has this tactic worked? Because you've been covering the matches in Sharjah, right? So, what do you have to say about that?
So, Sharjah has been interesting. By the way, there are no games scheduled in Sharjah in this Asia Cup. So, whatever I say right now, take it with an ounce of salt, because none of it should apply, in theory, to Dubai and Abu Dhabi, right?
Yeah.
Sharjah has offered a bit of turn. It's a small ground, so it's not that hard to clear the fence. But the conditions have been interesting in the sense that they haven't been any real demons in the surface apart from the odd turning ball. And well, let's just say spinners are having a good time, right? But no single team has won a game chasing in this tri series. So it's just win the toss and win the game thus far. And I think that kind of, you know, skews results in the sense that you can't draw many conclusions from it. Pakistan defeated Afghanistan when they batted first, and they lost when they were chasing. Tonight, those two teams play a final. And by the time you guys hear this podcast on audio, that's probably done already.
Yeah.
I think that Pakistan should have at least tried playing the extra bowler once in the build-up to the Asia Cup. The fact that they haven't done that is bothering me, because tactical flexibility is something that you like to see in a team. And Mike Hessen is the sort of coach who you expect tactical flexibility from. So I am not sure that putting all of your eggs in the extra batter basket is the right outcome. Maybe it works out for him, right? Maybe he's completely correct in playing this team or this combination. But then my question is the same as yours. When you're playing India, where are you bowling Saim Ayoob or Salman Ali Agha or Fahim Ashraf? And you're probably fretting over the Mohammad Nawaz overs as well.
Yeah.
Because this is India. They're not going to spare you. So you're clearly not good enough to outbat them. Pakistan is trying something new, but they have holes. As soon as the surface is a bit sticky or the ball starts to take some turn, Pakistan falter. When the conditions are extremely seamer-friendly, they also falter. So they need true bounce, true surfaces to perform. And versus India, I feel like if it's a toss-dependent game, then maybe it's a different story altogether. Yeah. But pound for pound, you're probably not better off, you know, gambling with more overs with the ball.
Yeah, I think I agree with that. What about Naseem? Do they not have him in the scheme of things anymore in T20s?
Yeah, no. Naseem has been having a horrible time across formats. And in particular, I feel that, you know, T20s is a format where Pakistan have better options. There's one guy, I don't know if you've caught a lot of him, Abbas Afridi. I think they could have had
heard
him.
I've heard of him, yes.
Because Abbas can bat a bit. He can whack the ball down the ground and he pulls the ball really well. So, you know, if you really wanted balance, you could have had Abbas Afridi,
exactly,
which they've kind of, you know, they've wasted that opportunity to have him in the squad. And Hasan Ali, I don't even know, like, what phase do you bowl Hasan Ali, right? So why have him in the squad at all? That's the issue where I
what
feel like Abbas
Zaman
could have
Khan?
Helped. But Zaman is yesterday's bowler for now, at least.
Okay.
I think they've also missed it. Yeah, I think they've missed a trick by not giving Waseem Jr. any game time, because he could have been good, especially through the middle.
He can also bat
death.
A bit, right?
Yeah, he can slam a six, but then so can Shaheen and Haris Rauf, right?
Yeah, even
those
Shaheen
guys
can
do that job as well. I wouldn't call any of those guys all-rounders.
No,
good news for
not.
Pakistan is that ever since Shaheen has made his comeback, he's bowling really intelligently and his returns have been good. He's wearing his pace really well. He's also developed a back-of-the-hand slower one, so that's good stuff.
Yeah,
and
I saw that on
with the new ball... Yeah, with the new ball, Cheyenne, he's not going for the magic delivery all too often. So he's bowling smartly. He's changing up his lengths very cunningly. And he only very rarely goes for the magic delivery, which I think should help him. He's lost a bit of clicks. We all know that. But he's still a good enough bowler to perform well in T20. So I think he will be absolutely imperative for Pakistan, especially in that India game. Because if you don't take quick wickets, you're done for. It's over.
Yeah,
right?
I think he'll be very important as always, I think. And as Bart as a serious fan was also asking, and I think you've answered his question pretty much, that you do think that he's come back to form to quite an extent. Of course, he doesn't have the same speed anymore. But I think...
Yes.
Especially in the power play, do you think, you know, is he taking a lot of more wickets? Is he taking fewer wickets now than his prime probably? What about the economy rate? Like, what are your observations from that?
My observations post comeback is that are that Shaheen is not going for a lot of runs in the power play, but he's taking one wicket at most. Huh. But then his death bowling has been better than before because he's switching things up. Then again, if Shaheen Shah Afridi is on a tear, I would like Silvan Aliaga to give him a third over in the power play. And he hasn't been doing that. So that's something that concerns me, because you want to maximize utility. And Shaheen, when he is on song, is a demon to face in the power play. So why not use him then? That's an issue. Other than that, who opens with Shaheen? Who takes the new ball? You have Nawaz, Saim Ayoub, Fahim Ashraf. These are not great options. Let's be real, right?
Yeah.
So... Are you really going to
get these guys against Abhishek Sharma, man? Like, I'm just thinking about it from that point of view. He's going to murder these bowlers.
A lot of these guys are sixth bowling options, not even fifth bowling options. And Pakistan have a lot of those. And I know multifaceted cricketers help, but quality also matters.
Yeah.
And you could get your approach right. You could make the right tactical decisions. Ultimately, you could just lose on quality. So I think they need to, at least, I don't know if they're going to do this tonight or not, but if they can play both of Abrar and Sufyan tonight, both frontline spinners, I think that might be a really good litmus test on whether or not that can work. They should have done this already. I don't know why they haven't done it yet. And then Haris Rauf, of course... through the middle and at the death, he would be crucial for Pakistan. It's interesting. They have holes, but trust me, Shayan, when I tell you that they look better than Pakistan of 2023 and 2024, because that team was rigid and they were going double old school and their methods weren't working and the results weren't coming. So I'm not saying Pakistan is way better. I'm saying that they're on the right trajectory. And if you give this team time, perhaps they can bring about some good results. At least they've won more games than they've lost this year. So there's that.
Yeah, no, I think definitely some progress.
Anyway, let's move on to the rest then. Sri Lanka, well-rounded team, but apart from Kusal Mendes, KJP, and maybe Pathum Nisanka, they do lack a bit of firepower in the batting. That's what I feel. Although the bowling attack looks nice though, right? One of Tushara or Pathirana plays, so you get one slinger.
Yeah.
Varindu Hasaranga, if he has a good all-round tournament, Sri Lanka will play the final again. Okay, that's pretty basic stuff.
True.
And then you've got Teekshana, who I really rate in the power play. Right?
Yeah, he's
terrible fielder, but really good carom ball bowler.
Yeah.
And then who else? Welalage. I think he provides a good option to them as a slow left armer who can bat.
Who can bat a bit, yeah, I remember.
Yeah, and then you can go to Chamira for pace, I suppose. So the bowling attack looks all right.
Yeah.
But after Pathum Nisanka and the two Kusals, KJP and Kusal Mendes, like Charitha Salanka can't smash it at that rate, right? And then you have a few holes over there in the middle order. So I feel like when they lose top order wickets quickly, Sri Lanka might falter. Other than that, I think people are sleeping on them.
Yeah, they just lost to Zimbabwe last night, right? Sikandar Azad, I think, took three wickets. And I was actually keeping track of that game because I'm doing this piece on Pathum Nisanka. And he has actually improved a lot as a T20 batter over the last couple of years. His strike rate has really jumped up from like mid-110s to 140s roughly in T20 internationals. So that's pretty handy. And I think he is a good player. I think he is more leg-side dominant from what I've, like from whatever numbers I've looked up so far. And but the thing with him is that he is a classical type batter, but he has increased his rate. So I think that will be very crucial for Sri Lanka because they need runs on the board as well, I think, ultimately. So something for their bowling attack to play with, right? So
absolutely.
That's one point, I think. And of course, as you mentioned, Kushal Mendes and Kushal Pereira are there. So I think they will be, you know, more of the faster scoring batters relatively, I would have to say that.
The two comments I want to take over here. One is Javed Butt, who says that you're praising Pakistan, but they've played Bangladesh, Afghanistan, UAE in the West Indies. Those are teams which are at Pakistan's level. That's what I feel. Okay, so that's one thing. And then Rishikesh says, Asalanka is really good in the middle overs. I think Asalanka versus spin is actually really good, but can he dominate spin to those sort of levels that is kind of required now in modern day T20s? That is a question mark for me, but he very well may be that guy. And he can also roll over his arm, so he provides them with a bit more depth. I think Sri Lanka are looking like a better T20 side than before, but they've also got issues. Like you just said, they got rolled over by Zimbabwe for 80 runs. And when that top order falls, I think the issues could arise. Very similar story for Bangladesh, by the way. Very, very eerily similar teams, those two. Because Bangladesh's bowling might be better than Sri Lanka's. You've got the fizz, you know, death overs sorted. I think Shorifull Islam is a really good left arm quick who is quite potent with the new ball. I'm quite impressed with him. And then you've got other options in Tuskin and who's the other guy? Tanzeem Hassan Saqib. Him in particular, I think they use him really well. They give him an over in the power play. Then they completely bowl him throughout the middle, right? And he is deceptively quick, nagging lengths, and he can keep batters honest. I like him. So
I think I remember watching him in the T20 World Cup last year as well.
Yeah.
And I think if I'm not wrong, he got the wicket of Kohli as well in that India versus Bangladesh game, if I'm not wrong. I could be mixing it up, but from what I remember, he got him bowled, if it's the same bowler. Also, another point on Sri Lanka, because we were talking about Asalanka. I just think that, you know, Asalanka, I think, is a much better player in ODI cricket from whatever I have followed. I think in ODIs, he's a really good number 5. T20s, I must admit, I have not followed him as much. But definitely, if he can get going and if he can bat well against spin, that will be interesting for Sri Lanka.
There's also a certain Kamindu Mendes in that team who we've just completely forgotten about. And you never know with that guy, man. Kamindu Mendes is someone who is loved at good areas, and who knows, this could be his breakthrough tournament in T20. You never know.
He's too good, man.
His ceiling is also really, really high. Coming back to Bangladesh then, so you've got those seamers, right? The Fizz, Shoriful, Taskin, Tanzeem Hassan Saqib, you probably played two to three of those guys. And then in spin bowling, you've got Rishad Hussain, who's a wrist spinner who can whack the ball.
Leg spinner.
He's not reached his potential yet, but he has a high ceiling, right? And he's then good. You've got Shaikh Mehdi Hassan or Sheikh Mehdi Hassan, who is the best or most, what would you say, prolific spin bowler in T20Is in the power play. No one has taken more wickets than him than since the start of 2023, I think. So you've got his skills as well, opening the bowling with probably Shoriful if they play him or Taskin. I think, you know, they are a very good, well-rounded bowling attack as well. I think across both Sri Lanka and Bangladesh, the Fizz might be the most experienced and, you know, potent seamer in these conditions with his slower ones and wrist movements.
Yeah.
But the batting is also problematic over here. Like, it's more problematic than perhaps Bangladesh, because even though they've got Litton has been somewhat not the same player that we thought he would become. I like the openers. I have actually watched a fair bit of them. Parvez Hussain Imon, and then you've got Tanzeed. Both of those guys are high intent batters. I like them. Those guys will be very important for Bangladesh. And then Tauhid Ridhwan, another guy who hasn't fulfilled his potential, right? Shamim is someone who can whack it. And then I think that, and Jaakir Ali. Jaakir Ali might be a wild card for them. Yeah.
He's that Steve Smith sort of a player, right? Like, he's a very unconventional technique. I watched him in the Champions Trophy, obviously. And I think Jared covered his style of batting. I think he's very...
He's very hacky, right?
Yeah, exactly.
But
that's the right word.
I think he's also very effective, and he could be a real, a trump card for Bangladesh in the middle overs if they use him correctly. He should bat no lower than 5 because he's one of the BPL's best performers. And you know what I like about this Bangladesh team? For the longest time, they had low intent batting, and you almost knew that approach would screw them over. These guys are new, but these guys are at least trying to play quicker, and they have certain batters in that lineup who can turn a game on its head. I think Bangladesh... This could be their best T20 team ever, honestly.
Oh, those are big words, I think.
Who else? Who else would kind of rival them? You should remember T20 teams of the past for Bangladesh.
They've
never really stepped into any tournament as hot favorites. Yeah. In ODIs, it's a different story. They were good in ODIs for a while, right? So it's interesting. I feel Bangladesh and Sri Lanka are very similar. And the recent series between the two was won by Bangladesh in Sri Lanka 2-1. So there's some more evidence that this team could compete. They also defeated Pakistan at home, although they lost 3-0 when they toured Pakistan. But yes, I feel like these two teams are operating at a similar level. Afghanistan is also really exciting. But before we move on to them, we shall be taking a short break. You guys are watching Good Areas Live, the Asia Cup preview with Behram and Shayan. So go nowhere. We will be back very, very shortly.
Cricket boards actually make watching their games almost impossible now. I spend almost as much time trying to find where I can view it as I do actually following the action. That is why I use NordVPN. They let me find all the cricket I want to watch while protecting me from the nasty side of the internet. Nord will free your cricket matches. Grab your exclusive NordVPN deal by going to nordvpn.com/goodareas to get a huge discount off your NordVPN plan plus 4 additional months on top. It's completely risk-free with Nord's 30-day money-back guarantee. Watch every match with NordVPN.
Welcome back to Good Areas Live. You guys are with Behram and Shayan, who are previewing the Asia Cup. We've discussed most major teams. We're not going to spend much time on Hong Kong, UAE and Oman because it would take a really special effort for either of those teams to cause an upset. But Afghanistan, I've labeled them as dark horses for this tournament. I actually feel like in these conditions, they could spring up more than a few surprises and they could even win this goddamn thing. There are issues though. They have, of course, one of the most potent spin bowling attacks in the world. Although I take the combination of Varun and Kuldeep ahead of Afghanistan's trio, but you have Noor Ahmed, Rashid Khan, one of Allah Muhammad Ghazanfar and Mujib, And then you've got Mohammad Nabi on top of those guys. And Fazal Haq Farooqi is a very, very good left-arm quick who bowls really well with the new ball.
Yeah.
It's a very good bowling attack. And I feel like they could dismantle the best batting lineups in the world. The issue is their intent. Afghanistan are playing like Pakistan of 2021-2022. They are successful because of their strike bowlers. And they are only even aiming for those 170-odd scores. They're going for the par totals and then trusting their bowlers to defend them. There are issues over here. If they're chasing, that doesn't work. So they have to bat first.
Yeah, that's a very fair point, I think.
Yeah. Another thing I feel with them is that, you know how in ODIs, they make sure to not lose top order wickets and then that's how they get their scores?
Yeah.
Well, over here, their top order has Gulbaz, Ibrahim Zadran. There's a new kid, left-handed bat, Sadiqullah Atal. Plays a bit slow, but very attractive bat. And Darvesh Rasooli is another guy who they're playing, who is good versus spin, has a solid arc from deep point to long off, but then again, also a bit too slow for my liking. My question is, Shayan, when you've got the likes of Azmatullah Umarzai, Gulbuddin Naib, Kareem Jannat, Mohammad Nabi, Rashid Khan, why are you playing it safe? Why are your power plays not fruitful enough? Why not just throw the kitchen sink at it and try to evolve as a team which is better than this one? Although they're a really good side, they only win their games through one method. That's, they only know how to win games in one way. I feel like they need to kind of, you know, break free from that mental barrier, because to me it is mental. All of those other guys are good hitters of the ball. So why not just go for it?
I think I can sort of see their approach because of, you know, the batters that you mentioned who are probably good hitters, but do they trust them to be able to, you know, pull off scores consistently? I think that is the same conundrum probably like Pakistan, as you mentioned. But Pakistan still probably had more batting options in their middle order back then when they were doing well in T20s. I don't really know how much I rate the Afghanistan T20 batting lineup, especially if their openers and their top order batters don't make a lot of runs. So I can, I'm starting to see, I think Umarzai, definitely he's a talented player. He's good. Nabi has been around for a long time. Gulbuddin Naib, does he have good stats, man? Like, have you seen him perform well consistently in T20s with the bat? I don't really think so.
In franchise T20s, he's done well, but he does struggle versus spin. I think I'd take Gulbuddin versus pace. Kareem Jannat and Gulbuddin are similar sort of batters. I feel like Gulbuddin is the better bowler, but they won't need his bowling, right? Because they've got all of those spinners, and now I think they're just going with Azmatullah as the second seamer, and they want to overload their bowling attack with
and
spin,
he can
which,
bowl in the
which is probably the best.
Well.
Yeah, yeah. I think that's the best bet anyway, right? Because Mujeeb and Allah Muhammad Ghazanfar can bowl in the power play. Rashid and Noor can bowl through the middle, as can Nabi. Rashid could potentially bowl at the death as well, as can Noor. And then you've got Fazal Haq Farooqi, who is a very, very good left-arm quick. I think he's underrated a bit. And with the new ball, I take him every day. And he has his days with, you know, the old one. Death overs is hit or miss with Fazal Haq. Some days he'll go for plenty. Some days he'll have a good day. But Afghanistan, I think, are not achieving their potential fully because, you know, sure, you'll probably win some games over here going for those 170 totals and defending them. What happens when you have to chase 170 plus, 180 odd? And what happens when you face better sides in the T20 World Cup? Why are you not preparing for that? Why are you not going for or aiming for those higher totals, which can ease things even further for you? With this method, it only works as long as your bowlers are working. I know this after having followed Pakistan. The minute the bowlers regress, you're done for. It's a very outdated method, but it works for them. And you cannot take Afghanistan lightly. And I feel like they will be inching to kind of make a major final, because that's one thing they haven't done yet.
Yeah, they made the semi-finals last year. But
yes,
making a final is different, of course.
It is very, very different. And I feel like they do have a slight edge over Sri Lanka and Bangladesh in their group. I feel like they have enough quality to down those teams. But then T20s are such a fun format that you never know. Afghanistan might be the team that could miss out on the group of death, right? Like, they could be the ones eliminated.
yeah, that can also happen. Anything is possible in T20s, right? And as you mentioned,
yeah,
I think...
absolutely.
Of course, they're very reliant on their top order batters, Ibrahim Zadran and Sadiqullah Atal, and of course, Gurbaz as well. Gurbaz doesn't have great numbers since the T20 World Cup. I just looked up his T20I stats. He's only averaging 17 in the last 7 innings and at a strike rate of 103. But that, have you seen him bat in the recent tri-series? What do you think is going on with him? Because, you know, I associate him with this aggressive sort of play that he can, you know, attack in the power play. That's what I think about him when I think about Gurbaz, you know.
that's what I used to think about him. And the guy that I've seen in the Tri series has looked like a shadow of Rehmanullah Gurbaz, the one that I knew. And he's been struggling big time. He's all over the shop, hasn't been able to get many runs. And when he has stuck around on the crease, the strike rate has been bad. I don't know what's going on in his head. I think that these are the plans that have been given to them. I think they are telling, like, I think Jonathan Trott is telling his team that get to 75 or 80 by 10 overs, don't lose a lot of wickets, and then go berserk in the last 10 overs. I think that's what they're doing over here.
I think that sounds familiar to you as well.
Yes.
As you mentioned, very, very Pakistan team.
Extremely familiar. Yeah. And it worked for Pakistan too, as long as the bowlers were doing well, right? Yeah. It worked wonders for Pakistan, but then as soon as the bowlers regressed and the batters lost some form, they were so rigid with that same template that for 2 years they chose to remain mediocre, and then finally they're now trying something new. Who's to say that works or not? But Afghanistan have this opportunity to push themselves. It's still the Asia Cup. You have bigger tasks ahead. I know this would mean a lot more to them than, say, it would to India, for instance, right? Yeah. Even though I wasn't expecting to see Jasprit Bumrah in the squad, and now he's here. So clearly India are also taking this seriously. And then, of course, you know, Afghanistan are still kind of perennially proving to the world that they belong. They've convinced me, but they still want to convince more people. And I think this Asia Cup presents a really good opportunity for them. I think they should be able to qualify for the Super Fours. And once you get to that stage, qualifying for the final is basically 2 wins out of 3, right?
Yeah, exactly.
So I think that that's what makes this Asia Cup really exciting, is that a lot of these teams are vying for that spot to come and challenge India and try to, you know, really showcase their skills and tell the world that they're here to play. So which makes it very even in terms of, you know, who the other finalist could be. And now that I've said this so many times, for all we know, India might not make the final. Because, you know, my jinxing powers are strong. Not going to happen, guys. All right. I want to talk a bit about the conditions with you. Of course, yes, no team has won chasing in Sharjah in the ongoing Tri series. Doesn't matter. Sharjah is not part of the Asia Cup.
Not part of it.
There are a few things at play. So they have laid fresh pitches in Dubai. All right. Okay. There has been no international cricket in Dubai since the Champions Trophy.
Yeah.
And what we have been told by Tony Hemming, who was chief curator of Pakistan and now chief curator of Bangladesh, is that we might see some different kind of decks in Dubai this time. There will be more carry, more bounce. So that's interesting. But then, because so much cricket will be played in Dubai, you expect those surfaces to get tired and the ball will start to turn later on and the wickets will get slow, which is something we associate with the UAE. So I think in that regard, it's a fresh new challenge for everyone, right? No one really knows how these surfaces will play, which makes this exciting.
For sure.
My big issue over here is the potential possibility of dew, at least in the latter half of the tournament. You remember the 2021 T20 World Cup, how dew dictated play, win the toss, win the game, right?
Yeah.
I don't want that to happen, although it might, because that T20 World Cup was in October and this Asia Cup is in September. And even if we don't see dew at the start, maybe towards the business end of this tournament, we start to see dew play a role. And Abu Dhabi has insane dew. So does Dubai. I think Abu Dhabi has more dew. But that way you kind of, you know, half of the bite is gone when you know that the toss becomes so, so important. And I fear that might end up being the case as this tournament progresses.
Yeah, I think that's never a good sight, I think, as a cricket fan. The 2021 T20 World Cup is probably the least memorable T20 World Cup. Of course, it also makes sense because India had a terrible T20 World Cup and I was a lot more invested in the T20 team back then. So I think that also plays a part. But in general, as you say, win the toss, win the game, I think it's not really very interesting to watch. And if it's going to be so toss dependent, I don't really know, man.
Yeah, hopefully that won't be the case. We've also got some technology now at play where they do minimize dew, but the games are starting pretty late, right? Like, it's what, 6:30 p.m. UAE time, I reckon, and that means that the second half of that game could potentially see lots of dew. But of course, these things are weather dependent. Cricket is a weather dependent and conditions dependent sport, but I'm really keen to see what these surfaces play like, because if we do get slightly seam friendly bowling or seam friendly tracks at the start of this tournament, well, that'll make everything a whole lot more spicy,
wouldn't it? For sure. That will be exciting to watch. I think because all the teams have various, like, you know, lots of fast bowlers, and maybe they can, you know, get some help out of it. Of course, I think it's pretty clear that India has the best fast bowlers as well. But even as you mentioned, Bangladesh have some really exciting fast bowlers. Pakistan has Shaheen, and, you know, it depends on who else they play as their seamer. But Shaheen should be very handy if there's a lot of help early on.
If Pakistan, like, look, I feel, honestly, let's suppose hypothetically Pakistan play 3 games versus India, although realistically it's probably going to be 2, but let's say hypothetically they play 3. If they win one of those games, That would be a massive thing for Pakistan right now, because the Gulf is pretty big between both teams. And currently, you know, Pakistan is operating in this, or at least with the fans and the media, in this toxic little cycle, because, you know, Babar and Rizwan have been axed and no one is taking lightly to that. So this team has added pressure in that regard. And then, you know, India-Pakistan games are always high pressure. Neither of those teams want to lose. So I think we will get a flavorful Asia Cup in that regard. I have a good feeling about it. And let's just hope for competitive games. That's all I ever want. Because one-sided games, no one enjoys, right?
For sure. For sure.
Anyway.
Yeah.
So before we end this podcast, Cheyenne, I want to do a round of predictions with you. Don't think too much about them. Predictions, everyone should take with a kg of salt. They are predictions. Yeah, yeah. We are not Nostradamus. We've given you our analysis and what we think will happen in this Asia Cup. But this is just a fun round. So, Group A, which two teams do you think are going to the Super Fours?
Group A, I think it has to be India and Pakistan again, right?
Yeah, I'm going with India and Pakistan as well. Safe shout, but you never know. You never know Pakistan if they've lost the
UAE
USA.
UAE has
last
some talented
year,
batters, right? Like, I think Mohammad Wasim, the proper intent merchant sort of a batter. Yeah. I think he can maybe create a difference, you know. Especially, I think he opens the batting and...
Yeah. If he has a day, Mohammad Wasim could really change a game. And they've got this left-arm quick called Rohit. He's 22 years of age. I like him. And then their slow left-armer, Haider Ali. He's also really good. And there's another slow left-armer. Another slow left-armer whose name is Simranjeet Singh. I like him too. I think he's a very talented player. So yeah, they've got options, UAE. But of course, like, they did lose two games to Pakistan, although gave them a proper scare in one of those games. Their fielding cost them. Their fielding cost them big time. Whoa. So, Group B, which two teams are going forward to the Super Fours for you? Because this is the tough one. This is the group of death.
I think Afghanistan will make it. I do trust their quality quite a bit. And because they have a very good bowling attack and even their batters, I think I might... I really like the gameplay of Ibrahim Zadran in general. Of course, I've seen him mostly in ODI cricket, but I do think he has the talent to be able to maybe translate that to T20s as well. And, you know, even if he's not going to go all out attack, he can bat a bit faster maybe. And, you know, and even we've seen in ODIs as well, right? He's not just a very slow batter, but he can, you know, increase the scoring rate. He scored that brilliant 100 against England in the Champions Trophy, Australia in the World Cup. So I think he has that gear, like maybe he can gear up and, you know, really... have a good tournament, I think, with the bat. And the other team, I would probably be biased towards Sri Lanka.
Fair. Yeah, I think I'm going to go with the same two teams, actually. Because in tournament cricket, I do rate Sri Lanka.
Yeah.
I don't think that, like, Bangladesh is far off. They could very well make the Super Fours. But just for the sake of predictions, I'll go with Afghanistan and Sri Lanka as well. And on Ibrahim, I feel like he does have that gear. He himself wants to get himself in. And he is quite good versus wrist spin. Look that up someday. Because I've seen him play some big shots versus wrist spin. That seems to be an area of strength for him.
Interesting.
Anyway, so finalists for you then?
I think I'll go India and Afghanistan.
Okay. I'll go for vibes and I'll say India-Pakistan. But my predicted winner is India. I'll play it safe over there.
yeah, of course. I will be very, very... very, very shocked if India don't win this Asia Cup. Like, I'm not even exaggerating them for the sake of it. I don't even have the same emotional investment in the team anymore. Of course, like, after my favorite players have retired and everything, I've probably become a bit more neutral and all those things are there. But I just think they're so strong, man. Like, it's just incredible how they've lost such few games of T20 cricket over, like, a significant sample size after the last World Cup. So, I think it will be very shocking if they don't win. And I think Afghanistan have more variety in their bowling attack probably than Pakistan. As you mentioned, their bowling is a bit of a concern. And although Mike Hessen, I think I do rate Mike Hessen. Of course, he was RCB's coach as well back in the day. And he played a big part in, you know, getting RCB back up to speed. But I think he's the sort of coach, he's really good at taking a bad team to a decent level. Although he's done well with New Zealand as well. But I don't know how good he would be at, you know, taking that team to the next level. So that will be interesting to see probably. And even, you know... maybe if you compare him with someone like Andy Flower, who's more of a winner. He's wherever he goes and wins titles. But Hessen, I think he has that thing in him that, where he can fix a lot of things. But can you take the team to the next level? I think let's see. Let's wait and see.
I think Hessen has a lot of method behind the madness that comes out on the field. But the issue is that, you know, Pakistan is not a team which is great with change. And that's partly because of all of the backlash that they get, honestly.
But then again...
I would be rooting for him to at least, you know, make Pakistan a very competitive side by the T20 World Cup that, you know, back in the day, no one wanted to face Pakistan, right? Mm. It was that kind of team, like, I don't want to play those guys in this particular phase of the tournament. They've kind of lost that, and I just hope that Hessen can bring them back up to speed in that regard. We've got a super chat, so I'm going to pause the predictions. We've got Mr. Diplomat. He says, Australia playing Asia Cup one day. I mean, why not just make it the Australasia Cup and have New Zealand in there as well? I'd love it.
Wouldn't that be half of cricket anyways if they add Australia and New Zealand? Mm.
Imagine this. I mean, this is a bit cruel to the associate teams, but
no, I'm saying get rid of... in terms of test playing nations more.
Yeah.
It would be how the test playing nations
Asia Cup. Yeah. Honestly, I wouldn't mind it. And I feel like cricket needs more tournaments like these because, you know, at least in tournament cricket, there's context and you're actually building up towards some crucial games which matter. Whereas bilateral cricket is just, I mean, white ball cricket is terrible. I don't even follow it as much anymore. And we don't even prioritize it as a cricket coverage platform at Good Areas. Yeah. Anyway, final few predictions from you. Who do you think will be the highest run scorer of the Asia Cup?
That's interesting. I think it's probably going to be Gill, but I like Ibrahim Zadran as well, as I've said before. He's something about his game is just, you know, really exciting to me. Maybe because I've covered the two, the World Cup Champions Trophy and the ODI World Cup. Maybe because of that, I'm a bit more biased towards him. Even Gurbaz, I think, has the ability to score runs, really, because I've seen him, even in the last T20 World Cup, he also got some runs. So,
yes.
But I think, yes, I will go with Shubman Gill. I think if he starts, he should be the highest run getter of the tournament for me.
Yeah. As much as I have expressed my displeasure on Shubman Gill getting picked ahead of Jaiswal, I'm going to have to go with Gill as well because he's the safe option. He's the accumulator, right?
Yeah.
So my mind tells me that, you know, if India keep winning games, Gill keeps getting runs and the strike rate doesn't matter over here because we're just talking about highest run scorer. So my pick is Shubman Gill as well. Highest wicket taker for you, Shayan, I'm going with Kuldeep Yadav.
That's interesting. I think the thing with highest runs and highest wickets is also which team is likely to play the most games. And if India are probably going to play the most games or maybe Afghanistan, one of Afghanistan or Pakistan or Sri Lanka. I don't think Bangladesh are a final contender. I think Afghanistan and Sri Lanka will have... Afghanistan, I think, are my second team. Then I would have to say, I think Pakistan and Sri Lanka can also still probably do something. As you've mentioned, Pakistan have shown some improvement and... With Sri Lanka, I think we know that in tournaments, especially in the Asia Cup, they seem to, you know, get back up. Of course, the last one was ODIs, but they won the 2022 one, right? Not a lot of us rated them back then either. But
true.
They did.
Well. That's actually very, very true. So, all right.
Most
then.
Wickets.
So,
I think even I will go with Kuldeep, I think then. Even Varun, actually, okay. I know I'll go with Varun Chakravarti,
Okay, that's fair. Right. Varun, you pick one spinner, I'll pick the other one. Player of the series for you, Shayan, I'm going with Hardik Pandya.
Yeah, I think that's a relatively easy one. If you like, it's a safe pick to go with Hardik Pandya, but I don't think I will go with him. I will go with someone else to change things up a bit. who can it be, man? Should make a unique prediction, I think. I don't know, man.
Okay, then. You're keeping us all waiting.
No name is your prediction. Like, you said Hardik Pandya, now no name is striking to me.
Just go with Hardik then. Or go with Akshar. Akshar is a safe bet, no?
Yeah, Akshar is also... Actually, you know what? Yes, I will go with Akshar Patel because I think he can keep the runs in check and they can promote him up to 5. He can, you know, be a very handy batter at times. And especially against spin, he can hit spin a bit. I think even in the IPL, he was very good at that.
True. And they have been using him as a number 5, right? And you know, I think that Gautam Gambhir's obsession with the left-hand batting combinations, I think... left-right handed batting combinations, that kind of works over here because they've got the players to execute those plans. But anyway, that's it for our predictions. Just, you know, take them as good fun. But also do let us know your predictions for all of these categories that I mentioned in the comments section below. We'd love to hear from you as well. And that'll be it for this particular Asia Cup preview. Thank you, Shayan. Thank you to everyone in the comments section for your interactions and your super chat as well, Mr. Diplomat. That always helps us. And of course, just a quick reminder, you guys can go to goodareas.co and bookmark that webpage. That can prove to be your one-stop shop for all the fun work that we do as part of this team, whether it be written content, videos, or podcasts. And then, lastly, as I mentioned at the start of the podcast, all of our shows on the Good Areas Network are powered by our supporters on Patreon, and you can become one of them by going to patreon.com/goodareaspodcast, and that will allow you to enjoy ad-free content, talk to us exclusively, give us podcast recommendations, and generally just talk about anything because it's a very, very inclusive community. It's like one big family, one big happy family. So yeah, we'll be expecting to see you over there, and that's all for today. we'll see you soon on another one of our podcasts. And yeah, have a good one, folks. Enjoy the Asia Cup. May the best team win. And goodbye.
Thank you for listening. This podcast has an ad-free version via Patreon, where there are also many other extras as well, including a Discord channel where you can chat to me directly. There is a link to the Patreon in the show notes. We are an independent podcast, so support us any way you can. Maybe give us a review, subscribe, or share on social media. All of these things help us. And when it comes to podcasts, word of mouth is always the best way of making it grow. If we had a guest on, chances are their socials are in the show notes. Please support everyone who comes on this show. I am Jared Kimber, and this is my network. But we also have hosts and co-hosts like Bahram Kazi and Estelle Vassadevan. This network is overseen by Nick McCorriston, and each episode is produced by Ishit Kaburka at Sound Potion Studio. Mukunda Bandredi, or Muku as most people will know, is the head of our YouTube channels, and he also helps out with so many other things like the podcast recordings. And there's so many other people we could thank here, but I just want to thank all the listeners and all the people who help behind the scenes that make this podcast work. If you make a lot of content like me, oh, you are going to need help. And that is why we use Minvo.pro, a slicing and dicing tool that uses AI to conjure up incredible clips from your podcasts and meetings. If you make content, go to Minvo.pro to cut it.